session number 23362, reel 2.
Elaine Cheverton, reel 2.
It was back to the sort of usual social round of dinner parties, polo, tennis, very much as it had been before. But I found this job made me feel that I was doing something for the war at any rate.
You were saying it was, or you implied it was rather unusual for the army to employ women.
Oh, very much so, yes. Very much so. And of course it would be again, you couldn't be employing a major's wife to work in an office with Indian clerks and British other ranks and so on. It would certainly be frowned on. It was only because it was a factor of the war that there were fewer men around to do these jobs, and that a trained secretary would be, a reasonable person to employ.
What were you actually doing in your job?
Well, it was mostly typing letters to other army headquarters, taking messages. Just a sort of general secretarial job. And then my father got we got stationed in from there. Well, before that I'd been the resident of Hyderabad, which was the sort of most senior governor kind of post. Used to have a personal assistant from it would be some young subaltern from the local, the current British service, British regiment, who used to do 2 years. The British regiments used to do 2 years service in India at various. There was always some British army around as opposed to Indian army, and the resident would have somebody who was really his sort of aide to. Rush around and organise things, and the same thing happened. They were all being withdrawn, going back to their regiments. So I got there for about 6 months until my father was transferred to Quetta as personal assistant to the resident, and they would have these sort of big dinner parties for sort of visiting celebrities and so on, visiting seniors. And it was my job to work out the table, seating precedents for dinner and deal with all the, taking letters and having the secretarial bit letters dictated to me and so on. And that was, I wasn't very happy in that. It was too formal and I didn't have any friends, And then I went up to Quetta.
That was with your father when he went,
yes,
was it?
Yes.
Had the Japanese war started at this time? When you went to Quetta?
Yes, I don't remember. What when did this...
This would have been December 41, wouldn't it? The attack,
yes,
on Pearl Harbor and then the advance after that.
Yes.
End of 41, 42. I was wondering if you remembered any panic or the reaction to the Japanese coming into the war at all. Whether there was any anticipation of it or reaction when it happened.
I have, funnily enough, I have no memory of that as making any impact, I think. I think in Quetta particularly, there was the whole mountain range between us and the rest of Asia, and one felt very secure. And I do remember in Quetta, this Freya Stark, was it, who brought the children down through from Persia through to Northwest India, and I think people began to feel, and she gave sort of talks about what had happened, and I think people began to feel that it was all a lot nearer than people had thought about.
Did you meet her at all?
Yes, I did.
Oh, could you tell me about her, who she was?
I don't know her. I think she was, whether she was German or Austrian, no, not German. Don't know what nationality she was. I put my hand over the thing, forgot about that. Freya Stark. And she got involved. She was one of these very powerful ladies who people found difficult to resist. You know, she said, oh, this needed doing. She got it. And she brought this group of orphaned children on one of these long marches and ended up in Quetta. They were all, presumably they were found homes locally. I'm very vague on that one, but it was because she was taking them away from where there was likely to be, and she wrote a book about it. I'm very vague on that one.
How interesting that you heard her, her speak.
Yes, and she was very forceful, and she was very much bringing it close, people more aware of what was going on. My father was briefly in the Middle East, but he got very bad heat stroke and was invalided back. So that bit of the army was being involved in the Middle East bit. I'm sorry, my mind is a blank about who she was actually bringing, but I know that she was bringing them out for safety, and people began to realize and was able to say more of what was going on.
When was it you heard about the WASPs?
Well, when I was in Quetta, and I think it was a sister-in-law of a WASB, had come on to Quetta on holiday where her on leave where her brother was, I think. And she sort of did some propaganda work to encourage people to join, and two of us joined because I wasn't doing anything in Quetta. I mean, I didn't have any secretarial work or anything, and one was feeling that the need to do something. And so then we went on this 3-day train journey from Quetta through to Shillong.
Were you sort of recruited by this sister-in-law?
Yes, that's
right. What did you know about the WASPs at that time?
Only what she told us, that they were doing this canteen work and serving the troops and... they needed more people.
What did your parents think of you going?
Well, they weren't very happy about it, but I think they saw that I was restless where I was, and there wasn't very much I could do, and they didn't. It was a long way, but I think they accepted it.
And that was a 3-day journey, was it?
3 days, yes. However many thousand miles it was. And in those days, of course, there was no air conditioning or anything like that on the trains, and you kept it cool by having this tin tub in the middle of the compartment with ice in it, and then at different stops they would renew the ice. And there were these sort of net screens to keep out the dust and the insects. But it was terribly hot and stuffy. And then as far as it was, it wasn't a train with a restaurant car or anything. You stopped at meal times at some station where they laid on a curry or food for when the train stopped for the best part of an hour while you had a meal and got back on again. And, I mean, there were also Indian travellers, but they weren't, well, they had the same system, of course, of having somewhere that they could stop and eat and have a bit of a wash and so on. And so it was a long journey right across.
You must have seen quite a lot of India going across.
It wasn't very. It was mostly sort of flat and brown, you know. We didn't go, I don't remember, until we got to Calcutta and then going up into the hills in Shillong. We changed trains at Calcutta. We stayed the night with some friends.
And what did you find at Shillong? You know, were the Wasbys by this time well established? This would have been 1942.
That's right, yes. Yes, they were, and that had been their headquarters for some time, and they were recruiting quite fast.
What was the headquarters like?
Well, it was a very nice house and garden up on a hill. It had been commandeered, I suppose. It had been somebody's house, and they had I suppose about 8 or 10 people at a time, and they'd stay there for a bit learning all the things we needed to know about, you know, getting in stores, making cakes, the cook making cakes. We didn't make the cakes ourselves. And then we would be posted to some canteen where they were building up, and I was sent to Imphal. I wasn't in Shillong very long, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. How about the leaders? Could you tell me about the Wasby leaders?
Well, we had Mrs. Nin Taylor, Major Nin Taylor, who's Sally's mother, and she was a very remarkable woman. Because she'd been involved with the Burma bit, and when, as you probably know, when the when everybody was being sent out of Burma, the government of India then became host to the government of Burma. That was up in Darjeeling, I think, wasn't it? And they wanted, the government of India was starting its own women's service, and they didn't want to be in competition. So it was finally agreed that the Wasbys can, and it was Nin who fought that it shouldn't be closed down, that they'd done a lot. There were all these people who wanted to continue, and there should be some more effort that we could be involved in. And so it was agreed that the Wasbys could continue as long as they did something that wasn't the same as the Women's Auxiliary Corps India. And she more or less steamrolled her way through. I mean, she was had a marvellous brain. She could work out how they could be deployed, and she bullied people into providing canteens. We always said they were devised in somebody sitting in an air-conditioned office in Delhi, because they were useless. They weren't four-wheel drive. They had very, very low slung, and all the roads that we went on were enormous potholes and things. So a lot of the time we just went out in the lorries with cases of things at the back. But she was a marvellous organiser, and a very And she didn't suffer fools gladly, but her second in command was Lois St. John, and she was a sort of warm motherly. Her husband was a tea planter, and she was sort of used to dealing with, you know, all the things that could go wrong. And they made a very good couple, because she provided the sort of continuity and warmth, and Nin would be off, you know, setting things up in different places, flying to different, you know, were places where she could get more staff and make sure that they were accepted. And she and sister, her husband was in the army, that whether it was she who insisted, or the army itself insisted, or the government insisted, that we should be seen as army units, so that there would be some discipline, in the sense that there would be somebody who could say, oh, you must move out of here and you must move in there and so on. Because we had this situation later in Imphal, when there was a group of missionaries who were being told that everybody was being evacuated from Imphal except the central people. That was the fighting people, really. And they said, no, we shall stay, and the Lord is on our side. And the history has it that the officer who was killing them said, well, I'm afraid the Japs are on the other side and you have to go. But being in the army, the WASBs being treated as an army unit, you didn't have that kind of problem, and I think it was a very good idea.
Yes, you would have been under orders, I suppose.
We were under orders, yes.
Yes. Did you have a uniform at this stage?
Yes, we did have a uniform. We had a green uniform with black facings, skirts and trousers for the evenings because of the mosquitoes and things. And I suppose Nin would have probably designed or got somebody to design that. And we had green turban things for sort of working in the canteen.
And would you have had an insignia, a sign that you were WASBs?
Yes, we had WASBs along the shoulder straps. And a WASB, I've got some that I can let you have. A WASB, this little black chinthe. The chinthe was the sort of little dragon that sat outside Burmese homes to protect them. You had a male and female, one each side the entrance to the Burmese houses. And so we had that, the little black Burmese chinthe.
Decided that? Have you any idea?
I think Nin would have decided all these things. She'd have thought about them and decided on them, and got somebody to, perhaps she might have got somebody to design them, but she would have known what she wanted. She always knew what she wanted, and that was the, I think that was the great thing, because when she went to see, you know, general commanding this or that division, she would they would be a bit, they weren't too keen on having the responsibility, I suppose, of a group of four or five women going around the canteen. But she managed to talk it round. And part of the thing was that they were not women who would be difficult, and they wouldn't be... you know, they had to understand from backgrounds and from joining up that they were under orders and they did what they were told, and that you didn't complain. You got some... We didn't complain about the living conditions, which, because we knew that was all there could be, but they were pretty awful living conditions a lot of the time. And we had... In Imphal, they had these, what they call barshas, that were made with bamboo sticks threaded with bamboo leaves, and sort of bamboo leaves roof. And that was sort of luxury, but you could have just a tent and you baths. You had a canvas collapsible bath, and they heated the water in empty kerosene tins, and the washing was, you know, done the same way. So, and you had, that was one of the things, because the rationing the army, the feeding the army, was quite difficult, because they didn't, I'm talking about Imphal now, it was a lot of people to feed, and they couldn't take, buy food from the market that would denude the locals of their product. So we had dehydrated cabbage. And the first, in the Wasby team, we'd say, well, you'll be cook this week, and you'll be, you know, the person loading the stores this week, and so on. So we had a rota of jobs that you did. And the poor woman who was the cook for the first week, she put the cabbage in. She didn't know anything about hydrated cabbage, and she put the cabbage in the saucepan and poured water in, and then it all swelled up and sort of oozed over the side of the saucepan. And soya links, which was the other great thing, and corned beef. And the army was would then be getting from railheads, work out the rations of so many ounces of meat per man, and send up the equivalent number of cattle, you see, for a regiment. But we didn't think about it, and nobody thought about us having anything sort of special, because we didn't have enough people. Then somebody suddenly said, well, you know, oh goodness, well, you ought to be entitled to a chicken a week or something like that. And this is when we got the ducks. And I, being a very devoted, and we had ducks in India, said, well, look, instead of eating them, why don't we hang on to them, and then we'll get some fresh eggs. And amongst the stores we had, we'd have things that needed to be written off, like cornflakes and things like that. So there was no problem about food for the ducks. And they were very tame, and there were two schools of thought: let's have some roast duck, and no, let's hang on for the eggs. And all through the siege, they laid eggs. We had to leave them there, of course, for the siege. And we sort of said when we were going, keep an eye on the ducks. And they started laying just a few days before the chaps arrived, and laid all through the siege. But we did have some fresh food then. We did have chicken and so on. It was only the ducks that I rescued. I think we bought the odd one or two in the bazaar. So the food was where we suffered from vitamin deficiency, you know. Sort of markings, and heat rash.
Yes, you had no fresh fruit or vegetables, I suppose.
No, we did. I think we did a little bit better in the end. I seem to remember we did a bit better with fruit, but it was a problem for everybody. You see.
Did that mean you had skin problems?
Yes, that's right. Sort of, you know, itchiness. Yes, that sort of red patches.
Yes, it's interesting, you know, saying about the formation of the Wasbys and how it was ordered and disciplined, because you were part of the 14th Army, I believe, weren't
you?
Yes,
we were.
Yes, which is, of course, the very famous, isn't it?
Yes,
the,
indeed.
The 14th. The Forgotten Army.
Yes.
And you had rules and regulations, obviously, as you have explained. But was there much differentiation with rank? You know, did you have different ranks? And was this observed any strictly?
In the Wasbys, you mean?
Yes, in the Wasbys.
Yes, we did, technically. Everybody started as a corporal. We didn't have any other ranks. We started as a corporal and worked your way up. But because we all came from the sort of same background and so on, there wasn't any. It was sort of, you know, amongst friends. Well, you do this week, you know, and you didn't sort of think of saying, well, I did it last week, you know. You did all, you know, it was sort of people from the same sort of, you know, not, you did what was the least fuss, really. So there wasn't any sort of feeling of rank of having to kowtow to anyone in any way. But you did, the team senior got the orders from Shillong or whatever, and you know they were the person that you went to for decisions about some items were running out of stock, and then they would order it and so on.
Would you have had area commanders?
I think we did latterly, yes, north and south, but otherwise I think it was all directly through Nin.
Yes, she seems to have travelled about a lot, did she?
Yes. And she turned, I think in the other Wasby book, she turned up somewhere, and where it was a very dicey situation, and walked in on the general officer commanding, and he said, "How did you get here?" She somehow, as I say, what she decided she wanted, she usually got.
Could I ask you now your memories of these sort of visits you made to the different groups of troops? First of all, you would have been in Shillong and going up, am I right, in North Assam, to places including Imphal?
Yes.
Yes. Could I ask you about the different... Did you go out to sort of little groups of troops?
Yes, we had... We used to go out, for instance, in Imphal, where there was an airstrip. There were anti-aircraft gun sites round, with again just a group of a few men, and we would go, and it would all be arranged with the commanding officers concerned, and they used to have a notice saying that the Wasbys would be calling on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. Would everybody make sure that they were smartly dressed and be careful about their swearing, you know, things like that. And we basically sold things which would have been on the NAFI stores, but cigarettes, writing paper, shoe polish, sweets, or shoelaces, you know, all those sort of things, which they could basically really have got from army stores. But it was the fact of, it was the morale-raising bit, which was the important bit of our job, that here were English women who were prepared to do something, to live uncomfortably, to provide them with, you know, people would talk to you and sort of say, you know, where did you come from? Oh, you're a townie, that's where I was born, you know, that sort of thing. And sometimes they'd give you letters to send. They had a mail thing. That was one of the things that was so difficult, where the Forgotten Army really did need raising morale, because it took ages for letters to come, and it was very, people didn't know whether, you know, how their wives were getting on, how their families were getting on, and it was Mountbatten who, made them feel. He came again, it was at Imphal, and he stood on a box, an ammunition box, and said, "Gather round," and, you know, just informally. And, gave them a sort of very down-to-earth pep talk, and he was very much in tune with what was helpful to say, and that, you know, that he was going to make sure that they got more equipment and better social facilities for getting the posting hurried up and so on.